Yeah, well, I'm supposed to be going sailing tomorrow.
Sorry, what?
I have two students that I teach, a husband and a wife. They're both retired, and they're boat people. They're very nice. They are very nice people. They are boat people, and about a year ago, they said to me, "You know, you give us such a hard time whenever we come for the lessons. You make us feel like absolute idiots. So we want to get our own back. We want to take you out on our boat." So, you know, this is last year, and I said, "Yeah, okay, that sounds good. I dare you. Scare me." You know, so a date was set. They said, "Come down to the boat," you know. So I went down to the boat. It's beautiful. Beautiful sailboat. I mean, it was just, we're not talking Monaco Harbour here, you know, but we're talking like just a really nice sailboat. And they said, "Right, come on, we're going out." So we got in the boat, put the sail up, and we went out onto the water, and there was no wind. And it's a sailboat, you know. So
did you just bob around the
we bobbed around, and they said, "We need rescued." So they phoned a guy
who has
a motorboat, and the guy in the motorboat came out and he said, "Don't worry, I have you out," you know. So he towed his boat to our kind of stricken sailboat and manages to tow us back to the harbour, because like by this stage there was even less than no wind. It was like negative wind at this point. And and then the guy in the motorboat says, "Have you ever driven a motorboat?" I said, "No, of course I haven't. You know, I play the piano for a living. Of course I haven't driven a motorboat." So he said, "Would you like to drive a motorboat?" I said, "Yes, please. I would very much like to drive a motorboat." So he's, you know, so we got out into the open water. He said, "Just, you know, that big lever there, just push it all the way forward." So I did. And I had a great time messing around the motorboat until it was time to come back in. Anyway, so that was my sailing experience for last year. So anyway, the very nice boat people couple have said to me, "Do you want to come out sailing again? Because, you know, the weather looks like there might be a bit of wind if you're up for it." I said, "Yeah, absolutely, you know. But I've come down with stinking cold and I don't think I'll be able to go." You know, I know it's not like, it's not like we're in an enclosed space. We're literally on the deck of a boat. But, you know, I don't want to, like, get crashed their boat day with me kind of sneezing and snotting all over their boat. So the boating might be on hold for now.
I don't see the appeal in boating, if I'm honest.
Nope.
Well,
not even close.
I think that there are, you know, the way, like, we are car people. We like cars. You know, we like nice cars. There are also plane people who are like, "I like planes, love planes. I have a plane."
You're both of those so far.
I was going to leave out the train people, because most train people do not own a train.
We're putting the train people so that you can tick that box
but
as well.
There are, you know, there are car people, there are plane people, and then there are boat people. You know, and it's expensive toys, which are for some people a necessary method of transport and for other people an absolute hobby. And I am not a boat person. I'm just
the boat hasn't been a necessary mode of transport in quite a while, let's be honest. There's not many occasions nowadays where a random person goes, "Well, I need to actually get on a boat to achieve my daily commute." That's not really a thing now, is it?
Like, well, most people also don't need a plane, you know. So,
well, it's more common than a boat. There's significantly more chance of me being on a plane than there is on a boat.
Yeah, I mean, but you know the way, like, even when it comes to traveling, you know the way some people are ferry people and some people are Ryanair people, you know. And those are two very, very different kind of people. Like, the people you meet on a boat wouldn't get on a plane. And the people you usually meet on a plane probably wouldn't get on a boat.
I don't know, man. We've done many a ferry crossing at Fergamore, and it's not much above Ryanair, let's be honest. I mean, it's certainly not British Airways, is it?
No, I mean, my mother-in-law is going to Wales next week. And there was no thought of, well, I'll just fly over and rent a car.
Is that because you can't get a goat on a plane, though?
To be honest, you're not really supposed to put the goat on the ferry either, but I don't think it would or has stopped her in the past.
No, but if you want a really good laugh, when you're queuing for the Eurotunnel, it does tell you you're not allowed to take ferrets on board. Like, there's definitely been an incident that has caused this sign. Like, at no point did somebody think that until a ferret was involved in some sort of international incident. And then they went, right, no more of those.
Yeah, you just know that person said, but there was no law against it. Well, as of right now. Yeah, imagine being that one guy who, as a result, managed to change the entire Stena Line policy. On ferrets.
It's great because when you're waiting in the queue for the Eurotunnel, they do this thing where you go through customs and then they kind of quarantine some cars in a row, and then a guy comes in and swabs, and they're very nice, and they usually say things like, you know, we're swabbing for explosives, and you're like, all right, okay, this sounds serious. But I always say, are you swabbing for ferrets? Like, if I had a ferret in this car, would your machine like pick red lights beeping as like, this car may not go forward because there was once a ferret in it?
In my entire 40 years or 43 years on this planet, I have never ever heard the phrase swabbing for ferrets. There'll be two more about from them in session later on.
I was going to say that is definitely a Smith and Sniff euphemism, that one, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
I've done about, in the last 2 months, I think I've done about 2.5 years of their podcast so far, just back to backing it.
It is a great podcast.
It really is. That's good use of your time, mate.
Yeah. It is a good use of your time, but it's a kind of a necessary thing. I don't feel you can start that podcast now without going back to the start, because everything is an inside joke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now you know about no suspension,
full suspension mountain bike guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we've got to him yet.
Oh,
I've not got that far.
He's a regular character.
Yeah. We have discussed Piss Fisters quite a lot.
good, good.
And we have just introduced the caravan game of putting the word anal in front of it, and then went to Switzerland and immediately won that game with a beautiful caravan called the Rimmer, which is just fantastic. So, yeah, it very much got me through thundering through France in somebody else's car. It was a great podcast to just drive through France.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, going all the way back to the start is great because you just get to put on episode after episode, whereas I have to do one a week.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And it's surprisingly not time sensitive. Even though it kind of is, because they talk about new cars when they're released. The only episodes that don't really work are when they're talking about Goodwood. Because obviously they do a lot of stuff with Goodwood, and you're just like, you know what, I'm going to skip this one because they're talking about what they're doing this weekend. And it's never that good because you can't just watch on YouTube afterwards. But other than that, it all translates. And I had this kind of weird thought of like, the car world actually moves really slowly. So I'm listening to like podcast episodes from 2023, and they're talking about like the latest Vauxhall Astra. I'm like, that's still out there. That's still the new Astra, like 2-3 years later. It's not like we've gone through like 3 generations of iPhone since this came out, but we've gone through half a generation of Vauxhall Astra. So it's still really relevant.
Yeah, speaking of cars, actually, so I found that somebody around the corner from me bought a Renault 5 in that very nice yellow with the red trim line.
Beautiful.
I got an up close look at one of those in a Dundee car. I had a Lithuanian plate on it, or a Luxembourg plate. It was just L. Which one of those is? I think that's Luxembourg. I'm not sure.
Is it Latvia? Or no, maybe it is. Luxembourg.
No, L is Luxembourg.
Okay.
Right, okay. So it was a Luxembourg plate, Renault 5, in Dundee, of all places. But got up close to it. Really nice up close. There's a lot of nice little details. I really, really like it. It'd be much nicer if it had like a 1.6 petrol or something. It'd be much nicer then, but you know.
Do you know, I was in France last week and I was disappointed because I didn't see a single Renault 5. I saw one of the Alpine A290, I think it's called.
What's that? Is that the Renault 5
that's the
Alpine badge?
Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, I saw one of those, but I didn't see, you know, I guess though, I mean, you've both been to France, you know that sort of French cars are either immaculate, quite rare, or basically have panel damage on every panel, including all of the interior panels as well. You know, somehow they have a dent in the roof as well. I guess the Renault 5 is just too new to be pushed into place by somebody in a Twingo.
Yeah. I particularly like going to mainland Europe and seeing all the road cars that we don't get here. Usually Renaults. Like you drive past one, you're like, I don't know what that is. And then you look at the name on the back of it and you're like, still don't know what that is.
Was it
a Renault, what flavor of Renault that
was
is.
Was it a Renault Fluence? Because
I don't know. I don't know if you're taking the piss or not.
No, I'm actually not. In Ireland, like there is a model of Renault called the Renault Fluence, and it's really popular. But they just don't exist in the UK market. Do you remember?
I don't know Renaults.
No.
Like there's one that begins with AK, I think, which I call the Arkansas in my head.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it's called.
The Arcanus or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, Arcana.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Arkansas.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the one.
Yeah, okay. There's also one called the Symbioz. I don't know what that looks like.
Oh, no, I seen one of them today. Is it not meant to say something like symbiosis or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
it has Z on the end.
Yeah, no, because it's trying to be cool and all this. And I don't know modern Peugeots either, because it's just the same numbers, but they don't seem to make sense anymore. I knew what a 106 was. And I knew what a 205 was. But I don't know what the new ones are. And some of them have got like 5,000 in eight. And I'm like, but it wasn't the 500 in eight. So do we call it 5008? Like how do Renault names, Peugeot names work?
5008.
5008.
That's disgusting. Don't say
it's
that
like
again.
The Renault 100, or sorry, the Peugeot 106.
No.
What was that car? Do you remember when we went to Le Mans in 2008 and we were in a French supermarket car park and we found, was it a Renault 5? Somebody had left it unlocked and we decided, why don't we move this person's car? It's because
they rolled into the car park with the engine off and just stopped the car in the car park.
I think I do remember that, but this was a different one where we decided we would move somebody's car for them. So we went up to the car. It was unlocked. We opened it. Possibly I got in it.
And then
everybody else started pushing it. And then this very irate French woman came running after us, gesticulating wildly to us in French, at which point I think I jammed the handbrake on and we ran off.
Yeah.
I think it was a Renault 5. Can't
remember. It was something like that. It was very, very small and very, very French and very, very broken.
Well, that's just French cars all over.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah, including the one that we were in at the time. It was a next Renault Laguna, which committed suicide at the side of the road, which is why we ended up there in the first place.
Yes, we did. Well, that is, of course, a story for another day. when we kept driving past nice hotel, nice hotel, nice hotel, bad hotel. This is where you're staying tonight. Where the lift went to 9, but the floors went to 3. Yes.
I remember in the morning watching Scooby-Doo in French.
Really?
Yeah, and it was called Le Grand Scooby Love, was what
the
episode was called.
Oh, I forgot about that. Snap crisis. Do you
not remember the bathroom where that you couldn't close the shower door because there was a wooden beam in the way and we flooded the bathroom? No, because it was a shower cubicle type thing, but you couldn't close the door because the building was in the way. So it just flooded the bathroom.
I know. I just remember that none of the floors were straight and none of the walls were straight.
Well, we worked that out partly because when we flooded the bathroom, all the water went downhill.
Another great trip to France that was. Can we talk about Formula 1 2025?
Yeah, did you say you've got a quiz?
I have a quiz.
You see, this makes it a one-on-one quiz between me and the man with infinite amount of motorsport trivia. This doesn't end well for me.
No, I mean, I was kind of hoping more people might be on this podcast, but you know, the two of you will have to do. I will pit one of you against each other.
Blowing review.
You will get you might get some points for hilarious answers, but you'll also get points for actual correct answers. So,
are we doing QI style scoring?
Is that just at the host's discretion?
Yeah.
Pretty much then, yeah. Okay. So, here we go. Formula 1 2025. Question 1. Oscar Piastri leads the title fight with Lando Norris second. It is quite tight at the top. But how many points does each driver have? Go.
Oh, right. 258 and 253.
288 and 275.
Oh, you're getting a point for that. The answer is Piastri is on 284 and Norris is on 275.
It was much better when it was 10 points for a win and 6 for second.
Good answer. Good answer, Dave. I'm going to give Sim 10 points for that. Okay, question 2. McLaren are clearly miles ahead in the constructors, but how many points did they have? Now, if you've been listening to the previous answer, you could have, you know, added
them up. Yeah, I really should be.
465?
472.
No, the answer is 559. That's 10 points to me. So, yeah, thank you.
The quiz master is getting points.
I'm the quiz master. I can give points to whoever I want.
This is rigged. Calm down, MBS.
Okay, in the Constructors' Championship, who is second and on how many points?
It's Ferrari on about 250 or something.
It is Ferrari, and
despite their best efforts.
Any idea on how many points? You said 250.
235.
No, the answer is 260. So point to Dave.
I like that. That's still like half of what McLaren have got. I'm still surprised it's Ferrari.
Everyone's going on about how bad a season Lewis is having and Ferrari having, and they're still second somehow.
Yeah, they are literally second in the World Championship. What percentage of the Red Bull points has Max Verstappen scored? Please answer to one decimal place.
95%.
Sim?
92.6%.
I give a point to Dave for that. It's 96.4%. I think
at what point is Max Verstappen a constructor?
I mean, he basically is. The other guy, just whoever it is, just seems to turn up.
Yeah.
Whoever it is.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever wants to have a go this week.
He's got an Alpine seat.
Yeah. 96.4. Like that's
incredible.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Like if you talk about those two questions together, I was sitting thinking, it's like, who should be second in the constructors? Because it shouldn't be Red Bull. And I was like, oh, it should be Mercedes then. Mercedes are having a pretty terrible year then, aren't they? That with Ferrari having a bad year, Mercedes must be having a shocker.
I think it's Antonelli, isn't it? I think George is maximising that car as much as possible, but I don't think Antonelli's really getting what everybody expected out of it at the minute.
He's been a little bit hit and miss. You know, on a good day, he's good. On a bad day, he's bad. But to be fair, like, he is very rookie. Like, there's rookie, and then there's very rookie, and then there's Antonelli. You know, yeah, so, you know, you can forgive him for minor indiscretions or for not maximizing the car. I mean, you think about, you know, Piastri's first year when he was in the McLaren. Tire management across a race was not one of his strong points. And even up until last year, that was something that held him back compared to Norris, you know, and it took him a couple of years really to get on top of that. You know, now, of course, he has, you know, but it takes a while to kind of get used to that kind of intricacy of the tire. So I'm prepared to give Antonelli some slack.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. For this question, I want both of you to answer this, and whoever gets the closest answer gets the point. List positions 1 through to 10 in the Drivers' Championship standings. You'll get 1 point for the first one, 2 points for the second one, right up to 10 points for the 10th place driver. If you get it wrong, you get no points.
I just get no points at this point.
David, could you please list the driver's top 10?
Piastri, Norris, Verstappen, Leclerc, Russell, Lewis. What are we up to? Six, seven?
Six? That's six. You got 4 to go.
Lewis, Antonelli. I guess you're out at that point, aren't you? If you even exist. One stroll.
2 to go. Maybe there might be a driver that scored a decent podium finish recently.
Yeah, I was going to put him in 10th. Alonso Hulkenberg.
Okay, incorrect. Nil point. Okay, you're getting 0 for that. Sim?
Piastri, Norris, Verstappen, Russell, Leclerc, Hamilton, Antonelli, Hadjar, Hulkenberg, Albon.
Nil point.
I forgot Williams existed. When you said Albon, I was like, oh yeah, that he's a thing.
Okay. I mean, I should probably give you the answer. Okay. The answer is Piastri, Norris, Verstappen, Russell. Dave, you said Leclerc there, but it's actually Russell. Then Leclerc, Hamilton, Antonelli. You were actually both pretty good at that point. Then Albon, then Hulkenberg, and then, bizarrely, Ocon.
Really?
So.
Forgot Ocon existed. I kind of forgot Ocon existed since he's been in F1.
I'm going to give myself 10 points for that one. So,
obviously. Figured.
Yeah. Also, because I didn't manage to work out how many points it is if you get it right. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8 plus 9 plus 10. I don't know what the answer is to that.
The last time we did something like that, it was Sims quiz, and it was you got 10 points if you got something exactly right, but you had the potential to lose like 10,000 points by being slightly off.
That was a quality quiz.
It was a brilliant quiz.
I mean, I can't understand why they haven't given you a primetime BBC One quiz. You should host Countdown. That'd be brilliant.
So, like 8 out of 10 cats does Countdown. Volcast does Countdown. Oh, I'd be well up for a Countdown round in us hosting.
Ooh, I wonder if we could do F1 Countdown.
It's got to be a Y.
Leave that with me. You heard it here first and possibly last. Okay, so I of course asked you for the top 10 drivers. Now I'm going to ask you the top 10 constructors. Same thing, same point scheme. David, go.
McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull. Nice name, have we? Williams, AlphaTauri, whatever they're called this week. You're not marking me down for getting the name wrong.
No, I'm not going to mark you down for that, no.
Sauber. Have we even got left?
Maybe I should have changed this. Can you name 10 Formula One teams?
Aston Martin. Aston Martin. Haas. Alpine.
Nil point. You weren't far off, though. Sim?
Apex Racing.
So it's going to be McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, Williams, Racing Bulls, Sauber. I've now also forgot the remaining teams. Aston Martin, maybe. Haas, Alpine.
It's the same three teams I forgot.
You are actually quite close. The answer is McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, Williams, Aston Martin, Sauber, Racing Bulls, Haas, and Alpine.
Can we highlight the Aston Martin thing there? Who has more points out of the two Aston Martin drivers? Is it the nepotism or the toxicity?
I didn't write this down.
I think Alonso does just.
Has he?
Yeah, he's had a decent run of races up to the summer break.
Just checking that out.
Hungary, we had the Alonso train at Hungary, didn't we?
They are on the same points. 26
really?
Each.
Wow.
But who gets it on that, point back?
World class Fernando Alonso is on the same points as BB Stroll. That's quite a talking point, that.
It certainly is.
Which one of them are you sacking at the end of the year?
Both of them. Okay. Question 7. Lando has won 2 back-to-back races this year. What are they? They are both races that have existed in the first half of Formula 1 2025.
Silverstone and Spa.
David?
Silverstone's one of them. Were they not in a weird order before Silverstone?
Everything's in a weird order this season. Japan third. Third or second was just like...
Who's the other one he won?
If only
Austria.
Yeah, if only somebody had a sort of calendar app to tell you what order the races are in or something like that.
I know, somebody should really build that. Yeah. I know less about calendars than what I did before now, because I now see so many of them. I was like, I don't know, are they going to most?
Well, you've also now got an app to help you, so you don't need to remember them.
Yeah, that is
and
true.
And an Android app, so there's really no excuse.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have an answer?
I think it's Austria. Was before Silverstone. And that was his double.
2 points to you. The answer is Austria and Britain. Simon, how many times has Lewis been on a podium on Sunday this year?
0.
Correct answer. 10 points.
How many has he been on a Saturday? Just the one in China?
2. Miami as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're getting extra points for that then. 11.
Oh, wait a minute. I asked a question and he got a point. What kind of quiz is this?
I know, that's not right. I'm going to give myself 5 points for that one as well. Then. Thanks, Dave. Good. Okay. We're doing good here. I don't have a list of who's doing well on the scores at the minute. But here's a fun one. For me, anyway. Maybe not for you. How many different drivers have stood on the podium on a Sunday? Bonus if you can name them.
Definitely not getting the bonus.
Do you need some dramatic music or something right now?
I want to say six.
I think we're going to have the same drivers as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
2 McLarens.
Yes.
Red Bull.
Yes.
2 Mercedes.
Yes.
1 Ferrari.
Yes.
Hülkenberg.
And Hülkenberg's Sauber, so that's 7.
You're both getting, I'll give you both 10 points for that. Correct answer is 7. And
I miss the days of like Ligiers and stuff like that turning up on the podium. Something daft. We got one Sauber one, you know. I want Gianni Morbidelli to be on the podium. There's a name from the past.
Did he ever score a podium?
Yeah. Adelaide 95 when most of the grid retired.
Oh yeah, between him, wasn't it Hill Panis?
Yeah.
In a very smoking Ligier.
Yeah, two laps behind.
Yeah, and then Morbidelli.
Yep.
In that excellent coloured arrows. The one with all the little squares. Love that.
There are only like six finishers or something.
Was it a footwork in 95?
I think it was a footwork.
Yeah, it was. But was it footwork arrows?
It might have been footwork arrows. Before it then became TWR arrows.
Is footwork like motorway work? You know.
There's a reference. Some track work.
Yeah, I'm just doing some footwork. Is that like walking? I've got quite a lot of footwork to do today because I have to walk somewhere.
That's heel and toe.
It was actually a Japanese logistics company.
Was it?
It was.
Was it?
I knew it was Japanese something, but I didn't know why it was called footwork.
Yeah.
That's going to go in the quiz then for the Ultimate 90s quiz whenever we do round two of that. Who has had the most DNFs this year?
Ooh. Franco Colapinto.
Carlos Sainz.
No points for anybody, unfortunately. The answer,
Jack doing?
The answer is Antonelli and Lawson have four DNFs each.
Oh. Okay. I thought the number would be much higher, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. Which...
Actually, Lawson, yeah, we should have got that.
Because he's crap. which drivers have failed to take a start this year?
Doohan has missed the last several races. Colapinto missed a few before that.
I'm really referring to drivers that were originally on the entry list as opposed to ones that maybe got ditched.
Did Sainz not make the start? Was it Austria where his car caught fire or something? They sent him out with a brake failure and he told them it's definitely a problem. Like, no, it's fine, and it caught fire.
Yeah.
And was our Lord and Saviour Lance Stroll not withdrawn from Montreal? No, it was Spain.
The one before it. It was Spain.
Because I was there. Yeah. And I didn't get to see him.
You know, that was on purpose.
Colapinto,
he knew you were coming.
Yeah, Colapinto technically didn't start the British Grand Prix, I believe.
Correct. There's one more.
Ooh, one more at Britain.
No, not at Britain.
Oh, one more in total.
Think towards the start of the year, the first half.
The first half of the first half. Give us a clue. Was it a car withdrawn before the start or mechanical? Or
it was a car that did not take the start.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was the question.
I mean,
it's not a clue if you just say the same thing again.
I don't know how I can give you a clue without just giving you the answer.
Was it a Grand Prix?
It was a Grand Prix. Okay.
I was going to say, Leclerc missed the sprint race in Miami, didn't he?
Okay. All right. Here's a big clue then. It was in Australia.
Hadjar.
Correct answer.
What did he do?
He spun off on the formation lap, didn't he, in the rain?
He did.
And then he was crying, and Marco said he was, who cares, really, what Marco says about anything.
Nobody cares. That's the correct answer.
Nobody cares about Helmut Marco. That is the right answer. Sainz in Austria, Hadjar in Australia, Stroll in Barcelona, Colapinto in Silverstone.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of DNS this year. You know, there'll probably be more.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, I really just think you should bring back Sunday morning warm-up. You know, that gives more drivers a chance to not take the start. Used to love the Sunday morning warm-up. you know.
Yeah, it only exists for you to have an accident and stress out your mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the car doesn't really need warmed up. It's just somebody's going to bin it. Jean Alesi is going to bin it in the Sunday warm-up, isn't he?
Who was it that said nothing good ever happens in warm-up?
Hugh Chamberlain.
That's that one.
At Le Mans.
Especially true at Le Mans.
Yeah.
Especially true. There's no need to run warm-up at Le Mans.
Yeah.
Unless you binned your car in qualifying a couple of days before and it needs a bit of a shakedown, in which case, use the runway.
Yeah, exactly. That's what runways are for. Who won the Lego race in Miami?
Alpine.
10 points. I think I just gave you... Yeah, no, sorry, I accidentally gave Dave 10 points there. So,
did you know that?
Because it's the only time they've actually looked any good this year.
And also, you must have watched the Lego race highlights video.
Absolutely. I watched the Lewis Hamilton video of it as well. It was brilliant.
Oh, I watched that too. Yeah. I mean, it looked like properly good crack, didn't it?
Didn't it? Let's just get rid of the races and do that.
It was nice to see drivers actually enjoying themselves for once.
Yeah.
None of the drivers were complaining that their tires had gone or that, you know, if somebody forced them off, it was done in a purely jokingly way.
Yeah.
That was just great.
F1 drivers really are a bit of a miserable bunch, aren't they?
I think when they've been forced to do PR, yes, but when they're actually driving, I think they're generally pretty happy, aren't they?
Well, when they're driving with no repercussions and your car is made of Lego.
Which is why Max is so happy.
Yeah. That's the way he just drives anyway. Who has driven the, who has completed the least amount of laps this year?
Jack Doohan.
Correct answer. I'll give you both 5 points, but can anybody say for another 5 points who, like, how many points he, or sorry, how many laps he did actually complete?
How many races did he do? 5. I'm going to say 100 laps between all 5 races.
160.
The answer is actually 215.
Okay.
Oh. Which is more than I expected. Okay, next question. On what lap did Max Verstappen pit in Monaco?
76.
I don't think I've seen the Monaco Grand Prix.
Sim, you were very close. The answer is 77. He did pit on the last lap.
Yeah.
It's a strat that could only work in Monaco, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were just praying for a safety car at that point.
That must have been his second pit stop then, yeah? Because you had to pit twice at Monaco this year, didn't you?
Yeah. Okay, so you could... Well, he didn't pit on lap 76 as well, so I can't give you a point for that.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I did see Monaco, because did Racing Bulls not do the opposite or something and pit both cars as, like, as soon as possible?
No.
Somebody did that, didn't they?
So Racing Bulls did the thing where they let Hadjar get well ahead while Lawson drove about 6 seconds off the pace so Hadjar could do his 2 stops and then carry on. And then you had Mercedes doing the exact same thing where they'd just create a gap for each other to do their pit stops.
Okay. Episode 2 of the quiz then, or part 2 of the quiz. There's only 2 parts. This is the second part. This is called Radio Review.
Oh.
So, who said the following lines over the radio? You get 5 points for each correct answer and 5 points if you can name the race as well. Okay, who said, at least Hulkenberg got a podium, not everything was bad? Come on, you know, at least know which race
it was. Silverstone?
Silverstone. I'm going to go with Bortoleto then.
I'm going to say it was Max.
No points to anybody. It was at Silverstone. Well, I'll give you 5 points for that. Actually, I suppose I could. I give myself 5 as well, just to be on the safe side. It was Oscar Piastri, who had a bad day.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Who said, I don't really know why you don't listen to me. It really annoys me.
Alex Albon.
Albon.
At Montreal.
Oh, 10 points to you. That is the correct answer. Okay. Dave, you did say Albon, so I'll give you 5 points for that.
I like that that's been a constant for Williams for about 20 years now.
More than 20 years.
But do you remember when like Lance Stroll was saying that they didn't listen to him and everybody was laughing at Stroll? And then whoever replaced Stroll did the same thing. And we've just gone through this for 20 years now of Williams don't know how to listen to their own drivers.
Yeah, I mean, they just, I don't know what they listen to. You know, they have made some questionable driver decisions in the past. But they do seem to be trying to change it around. Okay, who said, to be honest, I prefer not to speak?
Fernando Alonso at most weekends.
Max Verstappen at Spain.
No, the answer was George Russell in Monaco because he got a penalty and I can't remember what he got a penalty for.
Cutting the chicane deliberately.
I'm now realizing that most of these quotes are interchangeable between drivers and they're all basically the same.
Okay, who said, mate, this car is just undrivable?
Max Verstappen. It's Max Verstappen.
At every race this year.
We got it off of meat.
Do you know what race it was?
All
of them. Yep, 5 points extra, so you both got 10 points for that one. The answer was Silverstone, he said at that time.
Was that on his way to pole?
Okay. Yeah, probably.
Oh, he was on pole.
Who said, mate, my hand is...
Hadjar at Hungary.
Ah, oh, nicely done. He got hit by gravel.
Yep.
I didn't see that race.
Who said, this is so incredibly frustrating. We've lost all competitiveness. You just have to listen to me. I would have found a different way of managing these issues. Now it's just undrivable. It's a miracle if we finish on the podium.
That was Charles, and was it at Hungary?
It was, yeah.
It was. That's a
beautiful run. Oh, just it was fantastic.
It was poetic.
Yeah.
We'll add that to the words of wisdom. okay, this next one is it's an interaction between driver and engineer.
Max and GP, before you even say it.
I'll see if I can maybe do a different voice. My tires are okay. Can I extend? How many more laps left? And box, 20 laps. I don't want to stop. Box, box.
Was this Charles again and Hungary?
No, but you're not far away.
It's Charles somewhere, isn't it?
No.
It's a Ferrari radio.
It's
call.
A Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know that. Yeah. So it's Lewis somewhere then.
Lewis at Monaco.
Do you have any idea?
No, I'm going with Lewis Silverstone.
10 points. It was Lewis at Silverstone. Okay.
Didn't even know that. I just knew it was a Ferrari call from the actual words that you used.
I mean, I wasn't exactly going to put on an Italian accent, but yeah. Which driver said, Alpine still managed to find a way to me over after all these years, huh?
Oscar Piastri.
And what race?
I don't remember.
Ooh.
Oh, Austria.
Yeah, that was it. He got forced off by Colapinto in the last few laps of the race when he was chasing Lando.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Which driver said, my shifts feel like the 1972 Monaco Grand Prix?
That was Max. That's Spain?
Yep. Well, the clue is in the name.
No, Monaco then.
Yes, it was.
Oh, was it the next race where he said it feels like 1980s like, now? Or
no, he said
like
the next race he said, well, it feels like 1973 now.
Yeah, that was it.
That's pretty clever, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Which driver said, let's add that to the words of wisdom?
Charles Leclerc.
Charles Leclerc.
Which race?
China.
China.
No, it was Australia.
Really?
Wow. Yeah,
he got stuck in really early.
You did, didn't you?
I mean, that was Lewis really got stuck in as well in that race, didn't he?
I thought that was Miami where Lewis got stuck in.
Or
it's
Lewis
because
really
Lewis's engineer is an actual Muppet.
Yeah, I mean, that relationship. I wouldn't be surprised if they turn up after summer break and Lewis is a new engineer.
It should have happened in the Carlos Sainz days.
Yeah, but I think they're more likely to listen to Lewis than to Carlos, which is a shame. But, you know, if I think if Lewis says, I need a new engineer, I'm pretty sure they would get one.
Yeah.
Who said the following? We only have a handful more, so, you know, don't. If you're getting bored, don't worry.
I'm not.
Who said,
no, this is good.
You're not answering the question. It really doesn't matter, I guess. I'm just asking if I'm a minute behind or...
That was Lewis at Monaco.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one. But didn't he say, like, after the race, was it, like, are you not talking to me or something?
Yeah.
Like
that? Yeah.
That, I mean, that's just... You just don't hear drivers talking like that.
No.
Which driver said... I'm the unluckiest driver in the world.
I feel like that's another Charles one.
I was thinking it was an Albon one.
Neither.
Oh, Bortoletto.
No, which driver would be quite prone to exaggeration?
Alonso.
Oh, them all.
Yes, it is Alonso.
Is it?
Yeah. Of course it's Alonso. He's the guy who'll qualify ninth and say that was the best qualifying lap of his entire career.
Every lap Fernando does is the best qualifying lap of his entire career.
I've got no idea what race that was.
Okay, and the last one before the bonus question. Which driver said, well, that is bloody lovely?
That was Lando. I can't remember what race. Imola?
That was it, Max?
It was Max.
Was it?
Yeah, he got given a 5-second penalty in which race?
Most of them?
No, some of them were a 10-second penalty.
Montreal?
Saudi Arabia.
I forgot Saudi Arabia had a race.
Yeah, so did I.
When you said that, I was like, has that happened?
I think it has. The only reason I know it has is because I wrote it down.
Yeah, it's definitely happened. Well,
who won?
What did he get 5 seconds for?
Probably pushing somebody off at turn one.
Yeah, fair.
I think that actually, was it that and the Piastri one? He pushed Piastri off at turn one, didn't he?
That was it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You never know. With Max pushing people off at Saudi Arabia, that's just every year.
Apart from the year he managed to push himself off in qualifying.
Yeah. What did he manage to brake test?
Okay, last question then. This is the last question of the entire quiz. Who finished 10th in Hungary?
Did we know that?
Yes.
Hülkenberg.
Who is that one?
No, the answer is Joshua Pierce. Well, you saw the F1 movie, right?
I did see the F1 movie. Do you want to talk about the F1 movie?
No, I haven't seen it. To be honest, I don't think I will. We did talk about this on a podcast last month, I think. You haven't
seen it. I can talk about it without spoiling it. Story.
You can spoil it all you want. I'm probably not going to watch it, to be honest. It has all of the things I like. It has racing cars. And it's made by Apple, and it's Formula One.
Do you know what? See the first half an hour, it really does feel like it's made by Apple. the way that they pan, because they start off at Daytona in sports cars rather than F1, and the way that they do the panning shots is very how they do the panning shots, like Apple Park or the keynote and stuff like that.
Does Tim come out and say, good morning, good morning?
Yeah, it's just really somebody with even less personality than Brad Pitt. The motor racing is not great in it. It's just a bad movie. Just don't bother. It's really, you know what? It's had two directors at some point. And you can tell because it's a movie of two halves. The first half, somebody was like, we need to really be honoring motorsport and make sure that we're quite accurate here. And in the other half, someone was like, how about if they deliberately crash into each other and we have an evil villain with a twiddly mustache?
Well, wasn't Lewis quite heavily involved in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, so was Stefano Domenicali, who's like an executive producer.
Well, I imagine it sounds like the two of them, Stefano and Lewis, probably were quite specific about the racing scenes, where they said it has to be this and we want this and blah, blah, blah. And this is the kind of arc of the whole thing. And then the movie guys got involved and went, right, we want crashes, we want girls, we want money, we want yachts, you know.
That's exactly how it feels. At some points, there has clearly been bits edited out that are important to the plot, because there are some bits that just don't make sense until you go, oh, we may be missing a scene here, actually, because that would tie the whole thing together. And there's a couple of bits that they try to do a cool movie thing, like they do a nod here, and then they reference it here, and then you're meant to finish that circle, and it doesn't happen, even though it's about to happen. And you're like, did you just edit that bit out as well? Like, what the fuck? I feel like the director's cut of this is going to be 4 hours long and either much better or much worse. There should actually be two director's cuts. There should be the 4 hours long one where you get all the bits that they cut out that you actually need to make it a movie. And there should be a 90-minute one where they cut another hour out of it and it's just all the good bits. Because there's a good movie in there. It's just not the version they released.
So what you're saying is that actually there's going to be more bits that will be coming in a future software update.
Yeah, 100%. This is iOS 26, the movie.
I mean, the thing for me bizarre movie. I believe Sonny Hayes is 61 in the film, which is the equivalent of John Lacey joining the grid currently.
I'm well up for John Lacey in an Alpine.
I would rather watch that, to be honest, than the film.
Yeah. It's an odd movie. You should watch it when it comes out on streaming platforms, what on earth is going on here? Because there's some really, really good bits where you're like, wow, they put in a lot of effort here. And then there's some bits where you're like, what the fuck just happened? Did they do that? And then there's some bits where you're like, well, this is a genuinely bad movie, ignoring the motorsports stuff. Some of it's just like a crap movie. But
it's on my list.
I'm glad I went to see it.
Yeah, it's on my list below Top Gun and Days of Thunder. So
I quite liked seeing Silverstone on a movie screen. That was quite cool. That was the best bet.
So I am trying to add up the quiz results here.
I was talking to give you time because you look like you're struggling a little bit.
I mean, I'm usually okay at like using the sum thing on the on numbers, but it doesn't seem to
you know
to
you
work
could do it in notes now.
Can you
in notes app?
Really?
Yeah, if you've got a pencil, you can just draw and it turns it into maths. Or is it in the calculator app? You can draw. Well, of course, the calculator app can add up, but you know, you can draw stuff in the calculator app now.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Somebody finished in third with 82 points. Somebody finished in second with 130 points. And the winner was me on 140 points. So...
So one of us won. Well done.
Yeah,
somebody won, somebody lost, somebody cheated.
Sounds like a regular Formula One race there. Yeah. It perfectly encapsulates the spirit of F1 2025.
I feel like the scoring is an essential part of the quiz, like as important as the questions themselves.
That's a score. It's just a technicality. Don't mind that, you know. We're not here to be accurate with scores and stuff like that. You know, I think it should be maybe Formula One should adapt this kind of scoring, you know, where it's like you know, I think he really tried. Let's give him some extra points, you know. He was...
Isn't that Formula E, basically?
British touring cars, isn't it?
Yeah.
Points for turning up.
I met somebody at Knock Hill who had never been to a motor race before, so that was his first experience. He'd never watched motor racing. He'd never been to a motor race. But he was perfectly happy being like, this is great because I can ask all the stupid questions. So like, he didn't know anything about cars, basically. Lovely guy, though. But then he was like, I was shocked. They do like a bingo to work out who's starting where. I'm like, yeah, they do. Even the non-motorsport fan was like, this seems wrong. This doesn't seem like how it should be done.
Yeah, bring back the glory days of BTCC. Because we're old, we can say that the glory days were in the mid-90s. I mean, I was thinking about that, you know, because you were at Knock Hill and like you were kind of sharing stuff during the weekend or during Sunday of like, yeah, I'm at Knock Hill, you know. I was thinking, imagine how cool it would have been to be at like Brands Hatch in 1995 for the BTCC. It would have been better than the British Grand Prix.
I did do 97 at Knock Hill. So like I remember Super Tourers and I've done the what's it called? The Super Tourer revival type thing that I think now only does Brands Hatch, but I did a few races before. I did those at Knock Hill and like, okay, it's not the same, obviously. You've got a massively reduced grid and nobody's fully pushing it, but it's all about the noise, really, and the spectacle of the cars. And it turns out Super Tourers are exactly as good as you remember when you see the revival cars. They are actually brilliant. The Volvo goes past and it sounds very distinct, and the Primera, very distinct.
My first live motor race was Donington 99.
That was a good one as well.
Yeah, BTCC, the second one, not the one where Matt Neal won, but the second go round.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Honestly, glorious. I don't even know what cars are in the BTCC now. Is there an Astra?
There is an Astra. There is also Ford Focus.
Are they not all driving SUVs now? Does somebody have a Qashqai?
It's not Nissan, actually. That's kind of disappointing, right? There's BMW 3 Series. That's quite interesting because it's rear drive. You know what actually kind of shocked me a little bit? But it shouldn't shock me because I already knew this. But they all use the same engine. It's all the Tokka engine.
What?
But that means they all sound identical, which is just disappointing because they look different. Now, we talked about before that variety is important in motorsport and sound is part of that. British touring cars, every single car sounds the same, which is slightly disappointing. Like, I don't actually care that they've got the same engine, but I would like them to have wildly different exhausts so they at least sound different. You know?
So it's kind of like half a spec series?
Kind of is, yeah.
Well, it's like and Formula really, E then?
Yeah. Although better because it's at least got sound and you're burning things, which we do like. But I think that makes like every series on the British Touring Car bill at the moment is a spec series then. Because you've got Formula 4, various minis, Porsche Carrera Cup, Porsche Sprint Cup. I think they're all spec series on the British Touring Car bill now.
Yeah. I mean, to the casual motorsport fan, that doesn't really mean anything, does it?
No.
You know?
No.
They're just there to see cars hitting other cars and spinning off into the gravel and overtaking and somebody wins and everybody has a good time. I think, you know, for us real racing nerds, it's like, well, I don't really like that. I don't really like the gimmicky side of thing. I don't really like the spec series kind of thing. But are we the minority? Are they the minority? I don't know.
I don't think we're the minority, but I think touring cars exist in its own little bubble. It's very interesting because, like, you go to the Spanish Grand Prix, for example, and there's just McLaren gear everywhere. And Sim, you said that at Le Mans as well. There's a big crossover in a lot of motorsports, but I think British touring cars exist in its own bubble. They didn't really see McLaren gear. I saw Napa Racing in Laser Tools Racing NB Motorsport gear, and I'm like, you don't see that anywhere else. There's nobody rocking a British Touring Car Championship t-shirt at Le Mans. You know,
They would have done in the 90s.
Would have done in the 90s. There was a gentleman there who was wearing an Opel Vectra, which we know as the Cavalier, 1995 German something. It wasn't DTM. It's like STCC or something like that. Brilliant. Good, great. Just need those back.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose that's partly because cars were more interesting and were more varied then. You know, you just have to look at cars going past the window. They're all boring.
Cars are also huge now. Like, yeah. You look like there was an old Vauxhall Cavalier parked at Knock Hill in really good condition, actually, a really nice one. But it's actually quite small. It's not that much longer than my Volkswagen Polo, because my Polo has grown out into the size of what was a saloon. So, like, and I've seen one of those, the Volvo estate cars today, and it's like really, really nice car, like the modern ones. But it's actually really big. Can you imagine trying to race that now? Because it's huge.
Well, you could take up two grid spaces now with that. You could qualify first and third.
Yeah, like look at your Volkswagen Passat. It's like, imagine, like, I know you've got an estate version, but imagine the saloon version of that. Imagine somebody going, I'm going to race that. It's massive.
It is a big car. It is a big, big car. And whenever you really notice it now, whenever you get into like a small car, like an old small car, like my mechanic's kind of run around car for a while was a Toyota Starlet. And that's just like sitting in a crisp packet, and not even one of the big crisp packets, you know, one of the like cheap ones. It was like really tiny. It felt super close to the road. You know, if you wanted to reach the other side of the car, it wasn't a problem. The thing was just tiny. Whereas all cars are just SUVs now, and they're all boring. And all SUVs are boring.
Don't quite know what British Touring Car Championship is going to do. I mean, it's all hatchbacks, which I suppose will survive another couple of generations. But the absolute highlight of Knock Hill was ending up on a golf buggy with Nicholas Hamilton, which is not where I saw my day going. That was just the weirdest thing that's happened to me. That was great. We're standing in the paddock, and they do this thing where the paddock is open. You can just wander around and look at the cars, but then they close off bits of the paddock to move the British Touring cars to the grid, presumably because it's just a lot of cars having to move to them. And they didn't shuffle us out of the paddock, even though they shuffled everybody else out. So oh, this is great. We'll just hang out here a bit. And then the lovely girl from Unlimited Motorsport, who Nicholas Hamilton races for, Alex was her name, she was like, do you want to go in the grid? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, good grid walk. That sounds fun. So they're like, oh, hop on the golf cart. So it's her and Nicholas Hamilton in the front. And then there was four of us, but there was only two seats in the back. And she was like, oh, just hang on. It'll be fine. So you get hanging onto this golf cart, and it's like there's somebody kind of half sitting on me. Somebody else is hanging off the back. And she was like, we're going around the corner now. Be careful. And you feel the whole thing go like that. And you're like, could die at Knock Hill here. There's a significant chance that this thing's going over. You get to the kind of staging area, which you parked up, but it's on a hill in Knock Hill because everything's on a hill. But it didn't have a handbrake, so it just kind of rolled away into the staging area. So you run after the golf cart and catch the cart and pull it back. And we eventually just put it against the wall. Like, I'll come and get it later. It'll be fine. And then going to the grid, she was like, okay, so you don't actually have a pass. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I thought I was getting a pass. And she handed me Nicholas Hamilton's water bottle. She was like, you're the water boy for the race. Walk with purpose. Just go. You've got a job now. And I was like, cool. Eyes forward. I'm holding Nicholas Hamilton's water bottle, Monster logo on it. And on it. It might have been a hydro race bottle. I should message Dan and ask. Eyes forward, straight onto the grid. Nobody questioned it. And then you get on the grid and you're like, cool. This is cool. I can get used to this.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally bizarre weekend. It's not how I expected to see that going. Great fun, though.
Yeah, at what point does the imposter syndrome kick in when you're standing on a BTCC grid going, I'm not supposed to be here?
That's twice this year that's happened to me, because I did it at British GT Snetterton as well. I found myself in a group of people walking to the grid, and I was like, I'm just going to keep walking and see what happens. Ended up on the grid at British GT Snetterton. I'm like, cool, this is awesome. Quite enjoying this. So that's twice I've done grid walks this year without meaning to.
Yeah, I ended up on the grid at Rockingham BTCC once as well.
Oh, that's going back a bit.
It was, yeah. Yeah, that was interesting.
What year was that?
Sorry?
2004, 2005?
No, like not quite that long ago. It would have been 20... I say not that long ago. It must have been 2015, 2016.
Would Rockingham use that late?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just before it closed.
That was a terrible track.
It was good to spectate at. I'll give them that. That was great. But yeah, other than that.
Yeah, but that was awful. Do you remember the kart races there? That was a terrible idea.
I once did a running race there as well.
Well, that's the best use for that track.
Yeah, obstacle race, running up and down the grandstands. You had to climb a rope to hit the start light gantry. Climbing through the gravel traps over the tyre barriers, that sort of thing. Good fun.
Was this a tough mudder?
It was a suffering race, and I accidentally qualified for the British Championships in it as well. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't have anything that I can possibly add to this conversation. The two of you just end up in bizarre circumstances on racetracks.
Says you who started this podcast, you're off boating tomorrow.
I'm finding the key to life is just don't say no to things. Just say yes to everything. And you end. I was in a commentary box at Brands Hatch earlier this year because someone went, do you want to come up? And I was like, yes, absolutely. Why not? Last year, driving a Ginetta around Silverstone. Just don't say no to things.
This episode was brought to you by the Racing Line app, your personal motorsport calendar. Don't miss a single race. With over 150 series and 600 events, the Racing Line provides start times in your time zone, live streaming, and customizable notifications to alert you to the events that are important to you. Motor racing is our thing. Don't miss out on any of it. Get the Racing Line app from the App Store today.
Perhaps if you draw us a pair of boobies. Dun 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 d